chapter 3. The vow of studying the three Vedas under a teacher must be kept for 36 years, or for half that time, or for a quarter, or until the student has perfectly learned them. That would means 12 years for each of the three Vedas, something like that. Student must study in due order the three Vedas, or two or even one, without breaking the rules of studentship, shall enter the order of householders. He was famous for the strict performance of his duties, and has received his heritage, the Veda, from his father, shall be honored sitting on a couch and adorned with a garland, with a present of a cow and a honey mixture.
Honey mixture means madhu.
Yeah. Having bathed with the permission of his teacher and performed according to the rule of the Samvartana, the rite on returning home, twice a man shall marry a wife of equal caste who is endowed with auspicious bodily marks. This point will all come up again and again of equal nature. The equal nature is very important because then the husband and wife can relate to each other and understand the mentality. A lot of skipping around here. Okay, marriage rites, you know those, no? That's not so important. Brahma marriage, that of the gods, Daiva of the rishis, Arsha of Prajapati, Prajapatya of the asuras. Oh, no, excuse me. The rite of the Brahman, Brahma, that of the gods, Daiva, that of the rishis, Arsha, that of Prajapati, Prajapatya. That of the asuras, asura, that of Gandharvas, Gandharva, that of the rakshasas, rakshas, and that of pisachas, pisach. So the first four can only be practiced by the Brahmins. No, first six or nine. Oh, no. First six. Sages state the first four are proof of the case of a Brahmin. Okay. The gift of a daughter after decking her with costly garments, and honoring her by presentation of jewels to a man learned in the Veda and of good conduct who the father himself invites is called a Brahma rite. That's what the Satkriya argues. Gift of a daughter who has been decked with ornaments to a priest who duly officiates at a sacrifice during the course of its performance they call the Daiva rite. And the father gives away his daughter according to the rule after receiving from the bridegroom for the fulfillment of the sacred law a cow and a bull or two pairs is named the Arsha rite. The gift of a daughter by a father after she has addressed the couple with the text, may both of you perform together your duties, and has shown honor to the bridegroom, is called the Prajapatya. So within that, the Brahmins can follow those. When the bridegroom receives a maiden after having given as much wealth as he can afford to the kinsman and to the bride herself, according to his will, that is called the Asura rite, because he's paying for the girl. So it's very Asura, because the father never sells a daughter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, it's not, doesn't. So that's not even in the Arsha. Some will complain that you're giving a cow and that, but that's to respect the family. Mm-hmm. That's nothing to do with that. The voluntary union of a maiden and her lover, one must know to be the Gandharva rite, which springs from desire and has sexual intercourse for its purpose. So that's what Prabhupada talks about in the modern. That's basically. The forcible abduction of a maiden from her home while she cries out and weeps after her kinsmen have all been slain and wounded and their houses broken open is called a rakshasa rite. When a man by stealth seduces a girl who is sleeping, intoxicated or disordered in intellect, that is the eighth, the most base and sinful rite of the paisachas. The
so gift, how many are there?
Eight. Yeah, so four are approved and four not. The Kshatriyas can follow the Rakshasa, means they just have some, you know, that fighting spirit. It says, the gift of daughters amongst Brahmanas is most approved if it is preceded by a libation of water. But in the case of other castes, it may be performed by the expression of mutual consent. Yeah, says the son of a wife wedded according to the Brahma rite, if he performs meritorious acts, liberates from sin 10 ancestors, 10 descendants, and himself is the 21st. When it says 21 generations, so that's like 10 before, 10 after. The son born of a wife wedded according to the Daiva rite likewise saves 7 ancestors before and after. Arsha 3 in the ascending and descending. And that by the Prajapatya 6. Then, No, those are the first. Then the others doesn't, you don't get any of that at all. From the 4 marriages enumerated successively, which begin with the Brahma rite, spring. This is still the first 4. Enumerate successively, which begins with the Brahma rite, spring sons radiant with knowledge of the Veda and honored by the Shishtas, good men. Endowed with qualities of beauty and goodness, possessing wealth and fame, obtaining as many enjoyments as they desire, and being most righteous, they will live 100 years. But from the remaining 4 blamable marriages spring sons who are cruel and speakers of untruth, who hate the Veda and the sacred law. In the blameless marriages, blameless children are born to men. In blamable marriages, blamable offspring. One should therefore avoid the blamable forms of marriage. The ceremony of joining the hands is prescribed for marriages with women of equal nature. That was the Panigranha. Both hands were held like this. Like that, because if they're not equal, then it's like a Kshatriya, then in a, how do you say it? Yeah, then she holds an arrow. Like that, or different things. Okay. Let the husband approach his wife in due season, being constantly satisfied with her alone. He may also, being intent on pleasing her, approach her with a desire for conjugal union on any day excepting the parvanas, means all the forbidden days. 16 days a night in each month, including 4 days which differ from the rest and are censured by the virtuous, are called the natural seasons of women. But amongst these, the first 4, the 11th and the 13th, are declared to be forbidden. The remaining nights are recommended. On the even nights, sons are conceived, and daughters on the uneven. Hence, a man who desires to have sons should approach his wife in due season on the even nights. The male child is produced by greater quantity of male seed, a female child by the prevalence of female. If both are equal, a hermaphrodite, or a boy and a girl. If both are weak or deficient in quantity, a failure of conception results. He who avoids women on the 6 forbidden nights and on the 8 others is equal in chastity to a student in whichever order he may live. In other words, this is what Prabhupada talks about as the grihastha brahmachari, is that if only according to the proper principles, then one approaches a wife, then that is equal to that is the brahmacharya. That is brahmacharya. But if he breaks that, then it's not like that. So some will say that, it's, where does it say that there's any restriction and all that? Well, here it is. Like that restriction is there. Because then, otherwise, then what happens is then the whole thing is that it's not based on the relationship, it's based on senses. Like that. And that, then something is lost there. So that is why one is very careful about that. Okay. Yeah, then on that point before, no father who knows the law must take even the slightest gratuity for his daughter, for a man who, though avarice, takes a gratuity, is a seller of his offspring.
In the Bhagavad school, the duty of the spiritual master is to see that the disciple follows the Bhagavad. Does that also include the Panchatrika and the Vedic?
If you're dealing only on the Bhagavad platform, that means the student's also on the Bhagavad platform. So then the Panchatrika and the Vedic would only be applicable in as much as they were preaching or not. But if you're sitting under a tree, you just chant 24 hours a day. Wear tilak, wear neck beads, wear one piece of cloth, like that. And then if someone brings you something to eat, you eat, if not, you don't. Like that girl who was left after Haridas Thakur, the prostitute, and then when he initiated her and left, that's the Bhagavad. No endeavor. They don't beg, they don't do anything. They just sit there. If someone brings, fine. If someone doesn't, they don't. They're just only like that. But if one needs to go out and do these things, then you fall within the culture. Because then you're interacting with the social scene, other than just on the devotional, purely the, I mean, how you say. In other words, etiquette must be there. So the Vedic aspects must come into being.
Is it the duty of a spiritual master to instruct in the Vedic?
It is. We see Prabhupada in all his purports. He's always talking. If there's anything dealing with the culture, then he'll show. In the Vedic culture, it's done like this. So that is...
Because there's some that they want to separate. Spiritual master can speak about devotional things. And
but then how do you engage, you know, blowing your nose in Krishna's service? Because the point is everything must be engaged in Krishna's service. How do you do that? You know? How do you sleep? How do you conceive a child for Krishna's service? How do you do all these things? So therefore the Vedic culture is important because it gives all that. It means if you're just dealing with Uttamadhikaris, you don't need to deal with the lower levels. It may be a particular person doesn't have the specific knowledge in that, doesn't want to deal in that, or doesn't feel confident in that, and they may ask you to study that up from others. But we see Prabhupada speaks on all this in his books. All these different aspects he speaks on. You know, like that. He gets into all these things. Like what we've just mentioned now, I haven't mentioned, come across any verse that hasn't been, it's not in Prabhupada's books. Like that. So this aspect is there. Okay. Yeah, okay. Some call the cow and the bull given at Arsha wedding a gratuity, but that is wrong, since the acceptance of a fee, be as small or great as the sale of a daughter. When the relatives do not appropriate for their use the gratuity given, it is not a sale. In that case, the gift is only a token of respect and of kindness towards the maidens. So they don't use it themselves. Someone may give like that, but they'll give in charity to some other like that. 55. Women must be honored and adored by their fathers, brothers, husbands, and brothers-in-law who desire their own welfare. That means if the men desire their own welfare, then they have to honor women properly. Otherwise, where women are honored, there the gods are pleased. But where they are not honored, no sacred right yields rewards. Is a grihastha doing something, then the wife is also included. It's a 50-50. So if it's not, they're not properly cared for, then the right can't produce fruit, right? Because it also, her side is necessary.
When Ramachandra performed the
ashram, yeah. They said he couldn't do it because Sita wasn't there. So they had to make the gold form of Sita only, like that.
And when Brahma was doing some ceremony,
that's right. His wife had to be there.
Yeah, but she was taking too long to come. And they wanted to, the Brahmins were waiting, you know. You have to finish this, and where's your wife? So then they took some other girl. And, I don't know, I've read some, they put her through a cow to purify her. Because whatever comes out of a cow is pure. And,
you could pass her through the mouth of the cow.
Okay. Right, and then he married her quickly, and she sat, and they did that. They were able to complete the sacrifice, and she was called Gayatri. Gayatri means through a cow.
Oh, Gayatri, coming through the. Oh, I see. Yeah.
And then his wife Savitri.
Savitri, yeah.
She came and she's, hey, what's happened? How are you doing sacrifice without me? Who's this woman? And they told her. She became angry at Brahma. She said, you won't have any temples. You only here in Pushkar and nowhere else. And so that's why the only or the main temple of Brahma is there in Pushkar.
Yeah, you never hear of worship of Brahma. Everybody talks about Brahma and so much worship of Shiva. There's no worship of Brahma. It's very interesting. Very interesting. Yes, so the wife has to be present. That's a very good example. Very good example. So they must be honored. Where the female relations live in grief, the family soon wholly perishes, but the family where they are not unhappy ever prospers. It's where they're said to be Lakshmi. But this is, we're talking about trained women. You're not talking about, you know, selfish women who don't know how to behave. You're talking about women who are trained and know how to behave. Then if they're, means in general all women are, but it specifically means that they're trained. Because such a family where they deal properly with the women, then the women also have to know properly how to behave. Otherwise, it's incompatible. Otherwise, they'll send her back to her father's house. You know, because the father didn't train her. See that she got trained, so she'll go back. Then the father is, what's it? one devotee mentioned that his sister had gone nuts, something at the house, and they tried for years, this, that, so many doctors, this, that, to make her okay, nothing works. So then one day the family shows up at the door, you know, and brings the daughter, and then hands the daughter back to the father and says, now you enjoy the sweet rice. And then they left, and after about 3 weeks she became normal. Yeah. Somehow or another, I guess the situation in the house is something. Yeah, so she just somehow or another wasn't doing well. But just that whole point is, if it's just the everything's not working, then they'll just bring back because she wasn't trained properly. Mm-hmm. Like that. It means the family can maintain and refine, but they can't do basic training. Mm-hmm. That's not expected, you know. Just like someone is a student in school, learns their knowledge, and then after that they go to apply it. So when you go to the place to apply it, you can't expect them to train you in everything. They may give specific and refining and broadening and deepening understanding. They can't expect them to give everything. So the whole idea is that those who are, that's why it says equal nature. Mm-hmm. Means the boy is well trained, the girl should be well trained. The boy is not so well trained, and the girl, like that. They should find nature where it's very similar. He's materialistic, she should be. You know, he's not, she shouldn't be. You know, and they have to find that nature is there. That was the thing in the Vedic wedding, is persons who knew both parties, they would go and talk together. Because then they can find out from the other party actually what they're thinking. Otherwise, a boy and girl can basically never be expected to work it out. Because even if it looks like it's not going to be good, they just will always try to go through with it, you know, like that, because it's the euphoria of it. So that's why it's best always someone else does that kind of arrangement. Because otherwise it can be very deceptive, you know.
Vallabha did Balaji come?
It seems to be a different Vallabha,
right.
Bhatta. Yeah. It may have, like that, because his daughter was Vishnupriya, I think, Vallabha Bhatta. Oh, you mean Vallabhacharya came and then...
Somebody came to Sachi, said, your son is very good, I have some idea who she can marry. Then he went to her father, said, your daughter is very good, I know some boy who's very... And he went backwards and forwards.
Oh.
He made the arrangement. He got both parents to agree. And then the marriage ceremony was held.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Some Brahmin came in.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know either. Yeah, it was said that there was, I forget, one of the acharyas would come and do a wedding for Lord Chaitanya. I don't remember if it was Ramanuja or Vallabha, or one of them would do. No, Vallabha's later would have been one of the main four, Nimbarka or Ramanuja, like that. May have been Ramanuja. Ooh. The houses on which female relations, not being duly honored, pronounce a curse, perish completely as if destroyed by magic. You know? It's just they just evaporate. You know, like Draupadi on the Kauravas. It's just the whole dynasty just evaporated. Hence, men who seek their own welfare should always honor women on holidays and festivals with gifts of ornaments, clothes, and nice food. In that family where the husband is pleased with his wife and the wife with her husband, happiness will assuredly be lasting. For if the wife is not radiant with beauty, she will not attract the husband. And if she has no attractions for him, no children will be born. If the wife is radiant with beauty, the whole house is bright. But if she is destitute of beauty, all will appear dismal. By low marriages, by omitting the performance of sacred rites, by neglecting the study of the Veda, and by irreverence towards brahmanas, great families sink low. This is very important, because sometimes devotees, when they get out on the edge, you know, kind of on the fringe, like that, they don't perform the sacred rites, you know, the chanting and other activities don't go well, they don't study, they don't read properly the books, irreverence towards the devotees, like that, then even if they're great families, everything will be lost, you know. So it's not... But families that are rich in knowledge of the Veda, though possessing little wealth, are numbered among the great and acquire great fame. This is, you know, in connection like with this morning, the class. What is poverty? Poverty means lacking knowledge, basically. Because even the richest man doesn't think he's rich. Someone who has $100,000 wants $1,000,000. Someone with $1,000,000 wants $10,000,000. Someone with $10,000,000 wants $100,000,000. They want $1,000,000,000. They never. So poverty is a state of mind, like that. So that can only be accomplished if there's knowledge. If there's knowledge, one's never poor. One's never poor, like that. No. Yeah.
Wilson is the example of Alexander the Great came to some sage. He conquered some kingdom, and then he went, this famous sage was there, he went to see him, and he was sitting in a cave. So Alexander goes, "I'm Alexander the Great, I've conquered so many nations, I've established a constitution, I've sort of set up governments, I have millions of citizens, and I've heard of your greatness as well. I'm happy to meet you, and I would like to do something for you. Is there something that I can do? Is there something that you need? Is there?" And he says, "No, I would really like to do something for you." He says, "Okay. Can you just move aside because you're blocking the sunlight that's coming into my cave? You just do that. It'll be fine."
Yeah. I think that was something like Diomedes or something like that. Yeah. Maybe you just move out of the way and it'll be happy. Okay. Yeah, here, by sacrificing for men unworthy to offer sacrifice. In other words, they give offerings to people who aren't worthy. And by denying the future rewards of good works, by not having the faith that something will bring. You chant, you'll get the good result, all these different things. Then it says here, families deficient in the knowledge of the Veda quickly perish. With the sacred fire kindled at the wedding, a householder shall perform, according to the law, the domestic ceremonies and the five great sacrifices, and with that he shall daily cook his food. Well, this is the answer to someone asked the other day, what did they cook with? So it seems that the sacred fire that was kindled at the wedding, that one is kept in a pot, and with that he does all his daily yajnas, and with that he does his cooking and all that kind of. So that's the fire. Many times it mentions you can bring fire from the house of a Brahmin, because that's always pure. They always have some fire that's always going. They never let it go out. And householder has five slaughterhouses, as it were, you know, in his house. The hearth means where the fire is, the grinding stone, the broom, the mortar and pestle, and the water vessel, by using which he is bound with the fetters of sin. In order to successfully expedite the offenses committed by means of all these five, the great sages have prescribed for householders the daily performance of five great sacrifices. So it's, I always find it interesting. Devotees will say, oh, the Vedic culture is so complicated, so many rules and all. It means we give what Prabhupada is given, you know, or given what's in the Pancharatra. They'll say, oh, this is so much. They don't understand this. They've already dropped off 90% of it. They've just taken the simple, direct, devotional parts of it. Like that, or just proper culture, nice dealings. If, you know, otherwise, they have to do all these five great sacrifices. Very complicated, like that every day. Because when you use these things, brahmacharis don't have to do that because they're working for Brahman. The vanaprastha sannyasis don't, but the grihasthas, because it's their house, it's their facility, it's their, you know, they feel very much the. They're in charge, you know. There's always the mood that they should be running the show. They should be so. Yes, but then what about these problems here? You know, if you're in charge, then what about all the living entities that are killed every time you light your fire, every time you turn on you use your grinder, you know, every time you use your broom, you know, every time you use the mortar and pestle, you know, what about that? Living entities are dying. What are you going to do about that? So then there's huge amount of sacrifice that has to be there. So it mentions here, teaching and studying is the sacrifice offered to Brahman. Like that. So we have to teach and study and teach. And that's not, and so unless that is promoted. So these are the duties. Means brahmachari, vanaprastha, sannyasa are already, that's what they're supposed to do. But the grihastha also has to do that. He has to teach and study. And this is specifically more for the brahmana. That's the sacrifice to Brahman. And then offering of water and food means you know, whatever one eats, one offers. That's the second one. That's the sacrifice of the forefathers. And then the how you say, the Yuga Dharma, that is the sacrifice to the gods, like that. Then the one to the Bhutas, and that we don't have to worry about so much. And the hospitality of receiving guests is the offering to men. So that way then, by worship, offering to Brahman, to the forefathers, to the demigods, to the ghosts, and to the men, then these five, then they cut all those, like that. So basically by performing the Harinam Sankirtan, all these are removed already. And following the culture, receiving guests, offering your food, always chanting, always studying and teaching and preaching, then that's already taken care of. Means they also get remnants. But we don't have to worry about that, because when you worship Krishna, already the gods and everybody are taken care of. But if one's not doing that, then one has to go through and deal with everybody. You know, it's just like if you know the person on the top of the government, and he says he's pleased, all the servants and everything below, all the secretaries, everything automatically is taken care of. But if you don't know him, you have to go through all those secretaries, like that. So this is Krishna's, you know, he's just saying, take the fast path, just go to Krishna, and then don't worry about all these other things. Yeah. He who neglects not these five great sacrifices while he is able to perform them is not tainted by the sins committed in the five places of slaughter, though he constantly lives in the order of householders, because they're the ones that are liable for this. You know? They're the ones who are liable for this. But he who does not feed these five, the gods, the guests, those whom he is bound to maintain, lives not, though he breathes. Yeah. So these five are called Ahuta, Huta, Prahuta, Brahmanya Huta. That's feeding the Brahmins. Huta is the offering. And then Prasita. Ahuta, Which means not offered in the fire is the chanting of the Vedic texts, hearing Bhagavatam, chanting like that. Huta, the burnt oblation, so that would mean the Sankirtan. Prahuta is the what is offered to the ghosts. Brahmanya Hutas is the offered to the digestive fire of the Brahmanyas, the Brahmins. And yeah. Let every man in this second order, at least, daily apply himself to the private recitation of the Veda, and also to the performance of the offering to the gods. So that means hearing of the Shastras and performing, you know, the, how you say, one's japa and these things. For he who is diligent in the performance of sacrifice supports both the movable and the immovable creation. An oblation duly thrown into the fire reaches the sun. From the sun comes rain. From rain, food. Thereupon the living creatures derive their subsistence. So then the Harinam is the into the seven tongues of the Sankirtan fire. You know the seven tongues? Like that. Because Agni has seven tongues. So the Bhaktisiddhanta calls the Sankirtan the seven-tongued Sankirtan Yajna. So those seven tongues are Chaito Dharpa Namarjanam, Baba Mahadavagni Nirvapanam, Shriya Kai Ravi Chandrika Vitarinam, Vidya Vadhudivanam, Anandam Burivardhanam, Pratipatam Purnam Ritaswaranam, Sarvatma Snapanam. Those are the seven tongues of the Sankirtan Yagi. Like that. So, if those are being done, then that is being offered into the fire of Sankirtan. Then we see everything else happens. That's why by performing Harinam, the rain comes. Like that, because Sankirtan is also the fire of the fire of Sankirtan. Yeah. As all living creatures subsist by receiving support from air, even so the members of all orders subsist by receiving support from the householder. That's how it's the household is supposed to be supporting the others, though in the Kali Yuga it goes the other way around. You know? And then they complain about it. Because men of the three other orders are daily supported by the householder with gifts of sacred knowledge and food, therefore the order of householders is the most excellent order. The duties of this order, which cannot be practiced by men with weak organs, must be carefully observed by him who desires imperishable bliss in heaven and constant happiness in this life. The sages, sages, the guests, then, you know, the gods, manes, and buddhas, the householder who knows the law must give them what is due to each. So by performance of his sadhana, taking care of guests, and by studying and preaching the scriptures, then he takes care of all these. And by doing that, then everybody else becomes nourished.
Charity is very important for the Vrihastha.
Yeah.
For the Brahmachari, we see a different set.
Yeah, because the Brahmachari, he collects stuff, or whatever he collects, he gives it to the teacher. Like that. Whatever he does, he gives to the teacher. The Grihastha then gives the charity. You know, the sannyasi is very careful, doesn't accept much from very many people. Like that. But whatever he accepts is then, you know, would be used in whatever is his field, you know, whatever he's preaching, like that.
This morning in the class you gave like a set five principles: self-control, humility, service attitude, study, and something else.
That was
Yes,
that was in the Brahmachari. This has, he has to control the senses. You have to have knowledge, because otherwise without knowledge you can't control the senses. Mm. There must be respect. If there's no respect, you also can't control the senses. Mm. There must be cleanliness, and then there must be the service attitude.
Humility and respect, are they synonymous?
Humility comes from knowledge. When you have knowledge, then humility is the first thing that comes, because then we know we're servant of the Lord, and we know that we're not something very great. So someone who doesn't have knowledge then thinks he's great. He may have a lot of knowledge, but he doesn't actually have any realization of what the knowledge is for. Therefore, there's a problem. Oh, we got this small problem. An offering made in the mouth, mouth fire of brahmanas, who are rich in sacred learning and austerity, saves from misfortune and from great guilt. But let him offer in accordance with the rule to a guest who has come of his own accord, a seat in water as well as food garnished with seasoning according to his ability. The brahmana who stays unhonored in the house takes away with him all the spiritual merit, even a man who subsists by gleaning ears of corn or offers oblations in five fires. If a brahmana comes to the house and no one takes care, then when he leaves that house, he takes with him whatever is any of the spiritual merits. That don't make too small. Mm-hmm. That's too big, but those are not too small. Now your hands are... what will you do?
He's got problems.
I see. Okay. Maybe you should put a little water first, then the water will come off. Maybe just try to wipe it off and it won't come. You know, but when you put the water, then the water and the oil separate. No, yeah, you got to get on your hands. The water and oil separates, and then the oil floats in the water, and then you can wipe it off. Grass, room for resting, means kusa grass, would mean a sitting place. Room for resting, water, and fourthly, a kind word. These things never fail in the houses of good men. So giving a place to sit, a place to rest, some water, and a kind word, these are always had. But a Brahman who stays one night only is declared to be a guest, atiti, for because he stays stita, not long, anityam, he is called atiti. Stita means stays, not long, anitya, so that becomes atiti. He is called atiti, a guest. Someone who stays for a long time is not a guest. Mm-hmm. Right? Atiti means they're honored, all these different things, and the whole house basically stops for them. Mm-hmm. And if they're like, you know, a family friend or a relative or someone who you know very nicely and that, then they eat with you, they do things with you, and they're just kind of like part of the house scene. Mm-hmm. They're not atiti mm-hmm. as such. Mm-hmm. Atiti means is that, you know, just everything is just centers around them. Mm-hmm. One must not consider as guest a Brahmin who lives in the same village, nor one who seeks his livelihood by... Yeah. Even though he has come to a house where there is... Oh, yeah. And then this is interesting. Those foolish householders who constantly seek to live on the food of others become, in consequence of that baseness, after death, the cattle of those who give them food. In other words, Brahmana means he just comes one day and goes. He's unknown, generally, or... excuse me. And there's not, like, relationship or, you know, it's very formal. Mm-hmm. Then that is atiti. But just got householder Brahman who just goes to people's houses just to eat and maintain himself, then in the future he'll take birth as cattle in those houses. Because the cattle is maintained by that person and fed by them, but the cattle also gives at least some milk back or plows the field, does something for them. So in other words, one has to be very careful about, you know, a grihastha just living on others. Because he's supposed to support others. It means he's traveling, and he stops one day here or something like that, but that's not his livelihood. Mm-hmm. He's a Brahmin, he's traveling, then he may stop at somebody's house and get received by them and fed by them and that. So that's atiti. But like this, from the same village or someone who's just doing that as a, like that. Yeah, guest who is sent by the evening setting sun in the evening must not be driven away by a householder, whether he has come at supper time or at an inopportune moment. He must not stay in the house without entertainment. Let him not eat any fine food which he does not offer to his guest. The hospitable reception of guests procures wealth, fame, long life, and heavenly bliss. Yeah. Let him offer to his guests seats, rooms, beds, accordance on attendance on departure and honor while they stay, to the most distinguished in the best form, to the lower ones in lower form, to equals in an equal manner. So depending upon their status, then you will offer also. You know, like that. So there is distinguishing in this. Ah, this is a good one. A Brahmin shall not name his family and Vedic Gotra in order to obtain a meal. For he who boasts of them for the sake of a meal is called by the wise a foul feeder, Vantasin. Right? The same as a sannyasi who goes back to his wife is a Vantashi. Mm-hmm. So the same as a Brahman who says, yes, I am Prabhupada's disciple, I am this, I am that, and I'm so great and all that, and because of that I should be honored and this and that, he's also a Vantasi. Like that. Because then that means you're using the position of those before you for your own purpose. You know? You're using it for your own purpose, you know. That I'm coming in a great gotra, I'm coming in a great family. Like that. But that means you're using those persons who are great for your own position and all that. So that's one has to be very careful about that. Mm-hmm. This is where you just declare that to get what you want. This is not another thing where you know, if you're asked or they might be pointed out. It just depends. In other words, the gentle dealings must be there. Like that. One cannot boast of this. Says, but a Kshatriya who comes to the house of a Brahmin is not called a Atiti, nor a Vaishya, nor a Shudra, nor a personal friend, nor a relative, nor the teacher. You know, so that means if one of them come and you have an Atiti, that Atiti will be attended to. Then afterwards you'll take care of these other persons who have come to the house and like that. In other words, the formal will be done, and then after that, the informal dealings. Mm-hmm. In other words, there's a difference between formal and informal. Mm-hmm. Formally dealing with those who come to the house and informally. Mm-hmm. So these others, it'll be more informal. You know? Kshatriya, what do you call it? Kshatriya, Vaishya, you know, artist, personal friend, relative, teacher. They're all intimate. So then one deals with them more in that way, in an intimate fashion. In other words, for the relationship, this is more intimate, and then with a very respectable person, it's more.
When we were in Nathdwar, some people invited us, Brahmins invited us to their house, and they fed us lunch, prasad. And then when we came, there was a doctor, and he was a member of the temple board. He arrived as well. But that one who invited us, he sat us down first. And fed us. And then I said, will he take a shot with us? And he said, no.
Yeah.
And he was dealing with him as a friend on the side.
Yeah.
And then when we had finished prasadam, then he sat us down and whatever, and then he and his family took prasadam, that man.
Yeah.
He was the doctor at Temple Bar, remember, took prasadam.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the etiquette. That's the one here. Even to others. Even to others, personal friends and so forth, who have come to his house out of affection, he may give food garnished with seasoning according to his ability at the same time with his wife. Yeah, and then without hesitation he may give food even before his guests, means these very respectable personality, to the following persons, namely to newly married women, to infants, to the sick, and to pregnant women. They won't be fed right there in front of it. They'll, you know, in other words, you've cooked something, you offered it, like that. You know, but you can feed them in a separate room and things like that, because they can't wait. You know, and then the guests are taken care of. Then after the guests, then who is the general? You know, who would be the family members and friends and all those kind of things like that. So these things. It says, after the brahmanas, the kinsmen, and the servants have dined, the householder and his wife may afterwards eat what remains. It was there the last. It means after their own servants. They've seen that they've gotten taken care of, you know, and they've been given their share. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that they have to serve them. It's just they have to see that they're servants. Because the point is that they're servants, you know, they're shudras. Like that are like their family members, and so the infants and all that are served before them. But these aren't, they're older, so you don't deal with them, how you say? In relation to the guests, they eat afterwards. Mm-hmm. But for oneself, then one sees that they have. Then what's left, then the householder will eat. Mm-hmm. like this. Mm-hmm. So that is the, how do you say, you know, one would think the normal interpretation of the you know, the idea is that, well, if I'm the boss and my sutras are, you know, under me, is I eat first and then they eat whatever's left. No, here it's that they see that they've gotten, you know, they may not eat there, they may take it and eat in their place. Mm-hmm. But they've been taken care of and satisfied. Then only then he will take what's left. Mm-hmm. So it's a very different concept because you're giving shelter to them.
Right.
Normally it's this thing, you know, where the big boss and they end up at the afterwards, just, you know. But that's not the system like that. Yeah, this one's interesting. This is like same verses in the Gita. He who prepares food for himself alone eats nothing but sin, for it is ordained that the food which remains after the performance of the sacrifice shall be the meal of virtuous men. You know. Let him honor with the honey mixture, Madhuparka, a king, an officiating priest, a snatic, the teacher, a son-in-law, a father-in-law, and a maternal uncle, if they come again after a full year has elapsed since the last visit.
Mm.
In other words, big thing is done if a year has gone by.
Mm-hmm.
If they come more than a year, then that big is not done.
It's like a forbidden ceremony.
Yeah, so that would be why devotees somehow unconsciously think it's strange that if every time the guru comes after 2 weeks and there's a big ceremony, then they kind of think this is strange. Because it's only necessary to do once a year, if it's come after that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like that. Ah, now here's the thing, a finer point on that. A king and a Shrotriya, that means the officiating priest, who come on the performance of a sacrifice, means you're having a big program and you invite them, and either they're officiating or they're coming to take part, then they must be received that way, even if it's less than a year.
Mm-hmm.
However often it is, then it must be, because it's an official ceremony. So in the ceremony, there must be the ceremony of taking care of them. It says, but if no sacrifice is being performed. You know, so if they're coming more often than a year, it's not necessary. And it says here the settled rule.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one can complain. Okay, then a whole bunch of. Even if you want to have a special thing like for feeding someone, it mentions a large company destroys because you can't take care.
Yeah.
You want to feed somebody on somebody's behalf, then you should feed a few that you can take care of very nicely. Because then the Lord's satisfied. But if you just want to do a big thing and, you know, the more you feed, the more you take care, but they're not all satisfied and it's not done nicely and shot's not good, serving's bad, no one's satisfied. Not good. Okay, now we're going to the whole thing. Shraddhas, which we'll skip. There's like 7 pages on Shraddhas. Yeah, like that many pages. 130 pages on Shraddhas. Huh. Then you invite a few. and it mentions before is those that are more knowledgeable and all that. It says, let him make inquiries. Let him feed even one learned man at the sacrifice of the gods and one at the sacrifice of the manes. Thus he will gain a rich reward, not if he entertains many who are unacquainted with the Veda. Through a million of men unacquainted with the riks were to dine at a funeral sacrifice, yet a single man learned in the Veda who is satisfied with his entertainment is worse than all as far as the production of spiritual merit is concerned. So then one concentrates just on those who are advanced, you know. It says here, you know. But of course, we're dealing here as one who is acquainted, as knowledge, because it mentions spiritual merit. It means these others are not devotees. So in other words, feeding one, you know, how you say, properly situated devotee is better than feeding, you know, a million non-devotee Brahmins. You know, especially if they don't have knowledge. If they're very knowledgeable in their shastra, though not devotees, that's another thing. You get the benefit of feeding qualified Brahmanas. Well, for spiritual benefit, then one feeds the devotees. That's we're not doing for benefit for ourselves. That's being done for their benefit. That was specifically meant, like someone dies in the family and you want to feed some devotees on their behalf. So it's better to invite a few that you can take care of who they themselves are very qualified, you know, nicely respected devotees, and you take care of them and feed them and satisfy them, than to do a big, big thing and try to feed so many and you can't take care nicely. You know, it means if you can take care of many, then that's fine, you know. Or if it's just a simple thing, you add one thing and every devotee gets a little something, then that's all, you know. No, because they're regularly eating and you just add something to the meal, then that's nice. But where you arrange and invite everybody, and then if you don't take care, then that's very bad. In other words, one should do things according to one's own abilities and not be proud. You know, to try to make a big, big show, you know, of generosity is not good. You know, one should find a way in which one can be generous and respectful and all that, and actually have it get done, you know, like that. One should find that way. Subsistence, how do we get to there? Shraddhas. Okay, subsistence. And rules for snataka. Okay. He may possess enough to fill a granary. He may subsist by rita, truth, for the purpose of gaining bare necessities. Yeah, what is it? Having dwelt with a teacher during the fourth part of a man's life, and this should be the first part, a Brahmana shall live during the second quarter of his existence in his house after he's wedded a wife. Brahmana must seek a means of subsistence which either causes no or at least little pain to others, and live by that except in times of distress. For the purpose of gaining bare subsistence, let him accumulate property by following those irreproachable occupations which are prescribed for his nature without unduly fatiguing his body. You know, in other words, one doesn't work too hard. He may subsist by rita, truth, and amrita, or by mritya, and by pramrita, or even by the mode called satyanrita, but never by svavrita, the dog's mode of life. By rita shall be understood the gleaning of the corn, by amrita, what is given unasked, by mrita, food obtained by begging, and agriculture is declared to be pramrita, which means that which causes many deaths. Mm-hmm. When you plow the field, you kill all kinds of... That's why it's considered not the main occupation for... They just get what others get, or they beg. Mm-hmm. They don't farm themselves. If they have to, then that's the only way to do it, then they'll do it, but it's always considered less. So when you have... When you have devotees say, okay, enough of this you know, fancy talk for the Brahmins. Let's see the Brahmins get their fingers down there and they're in the carrots and start growing the carrots. That was a statement by an uneducated person. Because that is the occupation for those who are farmers and like that. They grow more than what they need. And then they will give in charity to the Brahmins. You know? Or, you know, just what's left in the field, they've already harvested the field, then they'll just go into the field and just whatever's left around that no one wanted, you know. They've already cut the grains, and when they cut the grains, some fall on the ground, they just pick up a few of those and walk off like that. When we say that they must do it, then at the same time we say, okay, well, all the farmers should come and, you know, teach English to the kids. You know? I mean, it just doesn't make sense. But these statements get made, unfortunately. Then, but trade and money lending are satyanrita, which means a mixture of truth and falsehood. So he can do business, you know, he can do down to agriculture business, but he'll never do. Service is called svarita, therefore it's to be avoided. The dog's mode of life, because he serves others, like that. So the Brahmin doesn't do that. He may either possess enough to fill a granary, or a store filling a grain jar, or may collect what suffices for 3 days, or make no provision for tomorrow. Moreover, among these four Brahmin householders, each latter named must be considered more distinguished and through his virtue to have conquered the world more completely. In other words, he keeps so much, you know, it's okay, but one who keeps less, you know, or doesn't make any arrangement for tomorrow is considered the best. Unfortunately, this would not look good in the ICJ. Like that. In other words, Brahmins should be, they live like Brahmins. If the others don't, you know, it's not their nature to live like that, that's fine. But they shouldn't consider that there's one thing for all. That's not very scientific. You know, Brahmins don't want to have all that. They don't want to go through the trouble. To them, endeavoring for it is a trouble. They have other things to do. While the other person, not endeavoring for it is a trouble. They'll feel completely dissatisfied if they don't endeavor for it. So they should endeavor for it and do their duty. And in their endeavor, they'll get extra. Then they can give to those who won't endeavor. But where we don't endeavor, but we don't have knowledge, then that's the householder who just uses his position to beg off of others. He'll become the cow in the next life. Right? But those who study, preach, teach, like this, you know, do the deity worship, then for them, they don't want to go into all this excessive, you know, gain, material gain.
I heard that if a Brahmin takes a job for someone else, then he's not a Brahmin anymore.
He's not doing Brahmin work like that. He's not doing. If he works for someone else, he's not doing Brahmin occupation. He may at his house follow the Brahminical culture and rules and all that, but in his work, he's not a Brahmin. Right, so if that's what one has to do that. But one then should not be proud that, yes, I am big Brahmin. You know? Like that. These are, you know. So that's why it says, even in distress, you should not take that one. You may do other things. Okay, let's see if we get down to those other parts.
The seventh canto also mentions that he never takes up the sword except in dire emergencies.
Yeah, well, that means goes out, conquers this, that, you know, like that, or takes up, you know, ruling a kingdom or that to do. And if they need, then they'll do those things. But they just don't accept someone else's service.
There's one sword that he has.
is knowledge.
Two.
Huh?
There's one for the yogi as well, for drawing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Sviya. He who maintains himself by picking up grains and ears of corn must be always intent on the performance of the Agnihotra and constantly offers those ishtis only, which are prescribed for the days of the conjunction, opposition of the moon, and for the solstices. Let him never, for the sake of subsistence, follow the ways of the world. Let him live the pure, straightforward, honest life of the Brahmana. So we see here someone who's going to live in this way. This is the balance, because someone say, "Wow, so you have so many lazy people." But it says someone who is maintaining himself by that way means just going and, you know, picking up here and there and not worrying about it. He must always be absorbed in sadhana and these activities. So it it's very obvious, because the person has no time. He spends a little time in the day doing a little something. That's it. He's always absorbed in devotional service, like that. Then and he doesn't follow the ways of the world. You know, we may say the real world, but the real world is not around here. It doesn't exist around here. The real world is on the other side of the Viraja. In this side, there is no real world. And someone who understands what's reality knows that. You know? Because otherwise, the real world, what is the real world? That would be my challenge. As soon as someone says, well, in the real world, what is that real world? Which one? There's millions of them out there. You know? The lifestyle I experience, no one else has experienced. You know? What one person goes through, the next person doesn't experience. It's a totally different world. It's totally, like just even here in Mayapur, totally different existences. Existence that we go through here in the Gurukul is totally different than existence of the Grihastashram or the Brahmachari or someone working in the guest house. Right? The guest house, they're in a totally their own world. You know, the person out in the Sankirtan, traveling Sankirtan, they're in another world. You know, like this, you know, the temple manager, another world. Like this, the pujari, another world. They deal with the pujaris, dealing with the deities, they see the people coming to the temple, that's their world. So when we talk about the real world, it doesn't exist here. It means this is the world in which we perform service. So when it says here, he doesn't follow the ways of the world, because the world has no, there are no real ways. You know, it means the ways of the world are not reality. And he wants to go get out of here, go back to Godhead. So he'll deal with the world only how much has to be to maintain body and soul together. You know, so that may not be popular now. You know, it doesn't bring in, you know, six-digit, you know, annual incomes. But it also avoids going to the heavenly planets, taking birth in aristocratic families, or, you know, taking birth in families who are interested in money and all that, as, you know, as devotees. So that's when one has to be a little careful. So this is how you balance that. Someone may say, so how many are going to do that? Very few. Like that. So those few that are doing that, then they honestly do that. And those few who are doing other things, then they honestly do those other things. And you know, whatever it is. He who desires happiness must strive after a perfectly contented disposition and control himself. For happiness has contentment for its root, and root of unhappiness is the contrary disposition. Yeah, okay, one who wants happiness must be contented and control himself. For happiness, there's contentment, it's root. You can't be content if you have material desire. As soon as there's too much material desire, then one is unpeaceful. And if one is unpeaceful, one can't be happy. That's explained in the Gita. Like that. As soon as there's more desire, happiness doesn't come. The idea is if I do so much and we develop so much wealth and all that, then there'll be happiness. No, it can't be. You know, that's like saying if I bang myself on the head with a hammer, then I'll be so happy. You know, like that. I'm banging with one hammer, I'm not happy enough, I'll bang with two hammers. The point is many in the past have been very happy with very little. And many in the past have had so much and not been satisfied. Because however much you want, then that much then there's a satisfaction is there. Unless it is engaged in Krishna's service, right? That's the fine line. If you can do that service for Krishna, then you're not desiring the result. You do the activity, it may give that result, and you may become very nicely situated and honored and influential and wealthy and nice facilities if Krishna arranges it. But if he doesn't, that doesn't mean that we don't continue with our duty. A brahmana who is a snataka and who subsists by one of the above-mentioned modes of life must discharge the following duties which secure happiness, long life, and fame. Let him untired perform daily the rites prescribed for him in the Veda, for he who performs those according to his ability attains to the highest state. Yeah, these are the twilight words here. It's that, for he who performs, see it says here, will secure heavenly bliss, long life, and fame. And the next one says, for he who performs those according to his ability attains to the highest state. The highest state is the transcendental platform. Like that. But they throw that in because then the person who is a karmakandi then will be interested to do this one. Right? Like that. Yeah. Because for the devotee, he's happy anyway. He's happy anyway. Whether he be rich or even in distress, let him not seek wealth through pursuits to which men cleave. What is cleave? Oh, means music and singing. With too great eagerness. Nor by forbidden occupations, nor let him accept presents from any giver whatsoever he may be. For let him not out of desire for enjoyment attach himself to any sensual pleasures, and let him carefully obviate an excessive attachment to them by reflecting on their worthlessness in his heart. So one should not over-endeavor for sense enjoyment, and one should always see that over-endeavor is not there by always reflecting in the heart how they can't give satisfaction. In other words, by knowledge that one always acts. Let him avoid all means of acquiring wealth which impede the study of the Veda. You know, we're specifically talking about the Brahmin. You know, who is well studied and all that, and he's going to be a teacher, preacher, like this. Let him maintain himself anyhow but study, because that devotion to the Vedic study secures the realization of his aims. Let him walk here on earth, bringing his dress, speech, and thoughts to a conformity with his age, his occupation, his wealth, his sacred learning, and his race. In other words, he should behave according to his position in the society. You know, he's vastly learned, then he can, you know, he can speak in the matter of a teacher. He's not, then he shouldn't present himself as a great personality. He's very young, he shouldn't move around as if he's a mature person of the society. You know, it's like that. In other words, he should be very careful of pride, and just according to his position he should deal. Let him daily pore over those institutes of science which soon give increase of wisdom. You know, no guest must stay in his house without being honored according to his ability. The seat, food, a place to rest, water, or roots and fruits. The householder must give as much food as he is able to spare to those who do not cook for themselves. And to all beings, one must distribute food without detriment to one's own interests. In other words, to all beings means, you know, food for life, that kind of thing. You do that without detriment to oneself. It means how much you have, whatever you have extra, that is given, but not more than you do. But as far as a guest or a very elevated person, you may, you know, they come, you may offer something, even though that may mean there may be something less. But for just in general, then you'll see that you don't do. Otherwise, one can get overly sentimental and give everything away and like, no. Because the thing is who you give to, you want to give everything away, but you have to give it where you're going to get the proper benefit. So it means it has to be given to the Lord, to the devotees, you know, the advanced devotees, the general devotees. Then only you consider general mass of people. So a distinction is there. A snatak who pines with hunger may beg wealth of a king, of one for whom he sacrifices, means he does rituals for that person, and of a pupil, but not of others. That is the settled rule.
Not from Vaishyas.
Huh?
Not from Vaishyas.
Generally they wouldn't, they would go to. Snatak means he's under, I think, a vow also, you know, to just be very... very strict and very, you know, very serious. And that also is Kshatriyas who worship, who rule according to the scriptures. That's a Kshatriya. Kshatriya is one who rules according to the Shastra. You know, if someone rules just according to management, that's not a Kshatriya. What do you think of that one? The Kshatriya has to rule according to the 14 books of knowledge. So that means he must know them, and he must associate with those who knows them. But others, they manage just according to management. You know, what is good management?
Shudra.
Yeah, Shudra, Vaishyas, like that. But the Brahmins and Kshatriyas, they manage according to Shastra. They use the art of management, but in line with Shastra. Vaishyas and Shudra. Vaishyas will use management, but what is in line with profit? You know? Like that. And the Shudra will use management to manage whoever, you know, do whatever he has to for whoever he works for. You know? A snatak who is able to procure food shall never waste himself with hunger. Nor shall he wear old or dirty clothes if he possesses property. It means if he has wealth, then he should properly dress himself and he should properly feed himself and that. If he doesn't have, then he may, you know, wear rags. In other words, he shouldn't, you know, be a miser like that in that way. He's just hoarding wealth, you know. No, if wealth comes, he uses it. If it doesn't come, he doesn't use it. Whatever comes easily, yes. But then, yeah, if he wants to live like that, then one can. But it says if he has the wealth.
Yeah, if he has the wealth.
No, but if he's already given it away, then he doesn't have the wealth. It's gone. This means you have the wealth, and then you act as if you're poor. Depends upon what one is doing. For oneself, yes, but for one's service, no. Let's say one has a big family, then it's not bad to keep wealth that it can maintain that family. But depending upon here the snataka, then he doesn't keep more than what he basically needs. You know, if he's preaching, you know, he'll dress nicely and these things, and that's all. He won't keep more than that, you know. That just what is needed for doing the service, that's all. Like that. In other words, for doing your service, then you should be dressing properly, eating properly. But if one, you know, yeah. Keeping his hair, nails, and beard clipped, subduing his passions by austerities, wearing white garments, and keeping himself pure, he shall be always engaged in studying the Veda, and such acts that are conducive to his welfare. He shall carry a staff of bamboo, a pot full of water, a sacred string, a bundle of kusa grass, and two bright golden earrings. This would definitely get on all the kids off. They knew, hey, it's great. But the problem is then they have to do all the other stuff. You know, it says wear white, so they can't wear all the crazy t-shirts. And, you know, I've never seen white blue jeans.
Right? It's like when a lot of devotees that grow beards during Chatamas. That's fine. And?
Yeah, along with the other. I remember once in Vrindavan, we were there, and there were a whole bunch of sannyasis there. Except for one, he made them all shave. Because he said only that one was actually properly following. The others are just growing beards. Because along with the beard goes the nails. No one follows that. It's the same vrata, growing the beard and nails. Everyone clips their nails but grows a beard. But you're supposed to let the nails go also. And if you let the nails go, after like 3 weeks, when you start taking your bath, you start scratching yourself. You have to be very careful. So you can imagine 2 months worth of nails, you know. And then the sannyasis, after 2 months, shave and then grow again. The householders have to go for 4 months. Sannyasi can go for 4 months. But he also can shave, because he's generally austere anyway. And the longer it grows, the more it itches. Like that. So it's an austerity. Except for hippies, they somehow don't find it austere. You know? But you can imagine 4 months worth of nails. Yeah, but they're also, it's a great annoyance. See, for someone who is clean, these things are a great austerity. For someone who's not clean, they get great happiness from them.
Chatamas should only be performed by people who are clean.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for those who aren't clean, then for 4 months they should clip their nails.
shave every day. Okay. Let him never look at the sun when it sets or rises, is eclipsed or reflected in water, or stands in the middle of the sky. Let him never step over a rope to which a calf is tied, because they always run around. One is that it's the rope is holding, so that respect, because that's considered like the ropes of Varuna, so it's not disrespectful to the rope, you know? And also it's not very intelligent, because you step over a rope and then cow moves and it'll catch your foot. In other words, the Brahman, his body is meant for studying Brahman and for teaching and preaching and benefiting others. So he should in never way, you'll see as it goes through, he should in no way compromise his health or anything, that he can't do that service. Just like a Brahman can't kill himself. If he does, he's liable. I mean, it's everybody who kills himself becomes a ghost. But a Brahman who kills himself, besides that, is then liable for killing a Brahman, the sin for killing a Brahman. That's why also is that the Brahmanis, they also can't commit sati, because then they're liable for killing a Brahmani, like that. But they become recluses, and they don't become sannyasis, they become recluses.
What about Parvati? Well, sati. She was a Brahmani, and she did sati.
I guess she can get away with it. Because at that time, yeah, get away with it. Because also these rules apply to humans, not to the demigods. and certain rules like that. You know.
It's an interesting story connected with that.
Oh, but the other orders then are generally they're encouraged to. Mm. So the Brahmani would like to enter the fire, but she doesn't. You know, she just absorbs herself in her sadhana. Like that. But the others, because of their passion, there's a chance they may not maintain their chastity. So then it's recommended that they do, because then they'll go and get the same benefits. You're saying a nice story?
Yeah, I don't know if it does.
Oh, okay. Let him not run when it rains, right? Because then you can fall over and hurt yourself. Let him not look at his own image in water.
Or a mirror.
This would be big, you know, like these big mirrors. You know, you use a little bit just for putting, but you're not looking at your image, you're looking at just the forehead, putting the tilak and that. So these little mirrors, or little image, you know, or looking in the water just enough to put your tilak, that kind of thing is okay. You know, or that, or just a shave, or whatever, these little things. But these big, nice, you know, big mirrors, look at himself, see how nice he looks, and puts himself in the bodily consciousness. Like that. Yeah. We go and stand this and that, and that.
Another thing is that mirror is not actually vastu, it's feng shui.
Mirror is feng shui.
Vastu people borrow that.
From feng shui.
And it works. But in vastu itself, in the scriptures, there's no instructions for putting mirrors in.
Mirrors, yeah.
But it's a borrowed principle.
Most likely what they would do is put windows, stuff like that. Vastu is generally more open.
Yeah, if you have like a narrow corridor, so according to Vastu, that's not good. So then modern Vastu advisors would say, put a mirror there, and it makes the corridor
look wider.
Seem wider, and then it counteracts the bad effects. That it's something that's from Feng Shui.
Well, that's interesting.
Or if there's like the shade of another building falling onto your building, the shadow of another building, or if there's a tree that's too close, like according to Vastu, you know, the ladies of the house are going to have troubles, then they'll say put a mirror there,
just so reflect the tree,
or if there's, you know, that house has something wrong, it's aspecting your house in a bad way, with the corner pointing at your wall or something, put a mirror there and just bounce it back to them.
Sure. It says that is the settled rule. So whenever it says that, it means this. No, there's no finer points and there's no discussion. Let him pass by a mound of earth, a cow, a deity, a brahmana, clarified butter, honey, a crossway, and well-known trees, turning his right hand towards them. It means they should always pass on the right side. Like that. Well-known trees. It means special trees, like you walk past Bamsi Bhat, or, you know, Krishna Balaram tree, Tulsi Devi. And you always walk so it goes on the right side.
Called Pradakshina.
Yeah, it's like going around. It's like you're circumambulating. So in India, you see just the roads work, that you always pass the other people with your right side to them. Like that. Like that. So it's basically India, England, follow that. The Commonwealth, and everybody else does it the opposite.
Japan does it
that way.
Japan also.
Some cultures.
And one of the symptoms that Yudhisthira saw when Krishna left was that the animals were walking up production.
They would pass them in the opposite way. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, because I think you probably mentioned previously the animals looked up to and respected the humans. They respected them. Okay, 40. Let him, though mad with desire, not approach his wife when her corses appear, nor let him sleep with her in the same bed. Right? So for the snataka, he never sleeps in the same bed with the wife. He always sleeps separately, like that. Or approaches her at improper times. Like that. So if you never sleep in the same bed, and there's all this restricted, then where does the idea, where can the idea come up that the shastras don't say no illicit sex? You know, even with one's own wife. You know, it means, in other words, those who have not studied the scriptures, they can say these things. Because Prabhupada has studied, and he says this.
That's why I asked you if the guru is obliged to teach the Veda, because there's one spiritual master from the Torah. He said something like, I talk about Krishna to my disciples, but I can't tell them when they can be with their wife and they can't be. That's none of my business.
Yeah, it can be, but the problem is it's none of one's business, but the problem is if there's any reactions, it's his business. You know? Like that. Point is you tell them what's the law, then if they follow it or not, that's their business. But at least when they must know what the law is. It's just they don't want to get involved. See, previously, this is a policy. The Gaudiya Mutt has never dealt with what happens outside the temple. They don't know how to deal with it, they don't want to deal with it. Like that. So when you're just dealing with the general Indian populace, you don't have to worry because they learn all these things from the family anyway. Like that. So they don't have to teach these things. But when you want to preach in the modern scenario with modern people who haven't been trained in these, someone's got to train them. So then to say, well, I only speak Bhagavat, but that's fine, but that means if they're not on the platform of Bhagavat, then Krishna says, then therefore they should follow sadhana. So who's supposed to teach him that? If you can't do that, then you should work for me. Who's going to teach him that? So at least the principles must be there. Little technical details, following of the art of applying the principles, that then they should learn from like-minded persons. You know, those problems of this and that don't go to the guru, but the guru must explain what is the principles. And we see Prabhupada's done that. In his books, he's done that. So what's in Prabhupada's books, if devotees explain that, then the work is done. The obligation is done. And then it's up to the different devotees to follow that. Like that. But it should be mentioned. Like that. Because the Vedic thing is foregoing also. You know?
So I might say that this instruction given here says, while in her course, should it sleep in the same bed?
No. It's two different things. It says here, let him, though mad with desire, not approach his wife when her corses appear, nor let him sleep with her in the same bed. Like that. They just don't. It's two different things. Otherwise, there wouldn't be a semicolon there. It's that they just don't. They don't sleep in the same bed. Like that. Because otherwise, then what's to keep desire from awakening? You know. Like that. You know. You get into bed to go to sleep, so the next day you have some life. You know? 41. For the wisdom, the energy, the strength, the sight, and the vitality of a man who approaches a woman. For the wisdom, the energy, the strength, the sight, and the vitality of a man who approaches his wife during a period of contamination, utterly perish. If he avoids her while she is in that condition, his wisdom, energy, strength, sight, and vitality will increase. Let him not eat in the company of his wife, nor look at her while she eats, sneezes, yawns, or sits at her ease. Where do we go through that? Yeah, this is mentioning, you know, in general that one would avoid. While she eats, sneezes, yawns, or sits at her ease. Boy, we had a whole discussion on this before. I don't remember what we discussed. Generally, the wife will always serve the husband like that. And then when he finishes, she'll eat. And she'll generally eat alone. Because women are shy. So the thing is, when they do these things, they let down they drop their energies a lot. And at that time, then... I can't remember what we discussed there. I don't remember it. You'd have to go back to this on the first time we went through it, because we discussed this very a lot. Why? Mm-hmm. But I can't remember it now. A Brahman who desires energy must not look at a woman who applies cudgel to her eyes, has anointed or uncovered herself, or brings forth a child. Prabhupada says, I think it mentions, if the husband watches the childbirth, he reduces his life by half.
Earlier we read something that does the father come after and cut the umbilical cord?
No, he doesn't cut the umbilical cord. He comes after the child's been delivered. Mm-hmm. Then he comes into the room and says, don't cut the umbilical cord, don't feed him milk yet. Mm-hmm. And then he comes and chants some mantras and feeds with the golden spoon. He feeds the ghee and the barley and rice and all that. Mm-hmm. And then that gives a special intelligence to the kid. Plus that being connected to the umbilical cord gives some special blood that's in the umbilical cord at that time. And that gives a lot of health to the child, protects them from cancer and like things like that. After that, which takes a few minutes, like that. Then after that, then he's fed the milk and that. So it creates all these like amazing like chemical reactions in the body that give intelligence and strength through that. Then after he says, okay, now you can cut the umbilical cord and feed the child. And then he leaves. Let him not eat dressed with one garment only. Let him not bathe naked. Let him not void urine on a road, on ashes, or in a cow pen. Because these places are road people walk, ashes is then the fire, sacred fire, and then Agni is there, and the cow pen, and the cows may come and step or lay there and that, and they're worshipable. You know, bathing naked is the water is Varuna, or it's a sacred Tirtha. And being a married man, then he knows what is men and women and what they do, so he should never be naked. Mm-hmm. You know, the small children doesn't matter because they're innocent, you know, like that. But for you know, the married man or, you know, the boy who is older, then they should never bathe naked. Yes. They could, on their own, like that, because, as I said, this question came up in Hungary. So the answer he gave is, women look a lot better than the men. So Varuna doesn't mind the women being naked, but it finds the naked men an annoyance. I don't know if that makes any sense, but like that. But if they're in a place where it's not totally private, then they have to know how to bathe basically fully dressed, you know? And, I mean, I've seen it here hundreds and hundreds of times, just in Navadvip area. Ladies always come down and, well, sometime late morning or around noon, and wash clothes, collect water, take their bath and that, with all the clothes on, and they're very expert at doing it, like that. But what Prabhupada is talking about there in the Krishna book is that they had their own ghat where men would never go. It just, no one would go there. And then they could bathe like that. It's also in the men, they bathe naked, it creates ego. While the women bathe naked, it creates shyness.
How does it create shyness?
Everything's so open, and then it creates, how to say, just by their nature. Then they pull in. You know, like that. But that's for someone who's trained. Someone who's untrained, then they get more wild. But when they're trained, then they pull in. You know, like that. Also, we see that there's so many things in the Vedic culture that allows these aspects to be expressed, so that the mystique of all this kind of stuff is taken away. Like we mentioned before, in conceiving a child, and there's so much planning and discussion beforehand, and picking proper times and everything like that, that it, all the mystique is kind of taken away. So if someone likes to absorb himself thinking of these things, if he does it according to Krishna, then it's not just sex, it's a whole, much more is there in it. You know, it's a, like that. So then that reduces actually the how do you say, the attachment to it. Like that. Nor in plowed land, means you going to the toilet, on plowed land, in water, on an altar of bricks, on a mountain, in the ruins of a temple, nor ever on an anthill, because anthills are considered pure, and the mud from the anthills are used for sacrifices and yajnas and for the deities and different things. So anthills are always considered pure, so they're never to be contaminated. I think it says here. I think it's generally, you'll notice that these things are, one is either there's a personality there that you're respecting, or it's where other people go or are going to use. Like on a road, people are going to walk there. On plowed land, that means someone's going to walk there and plant things, you know. Or it may contaminate the things that will grow there. In water, then you disrespect water and you contaminate the water. People are going to use that water for bathing, drinking, and, you know, taking for different works. On an altar, that's quite obvious. Then on a mountain means on the ruins of a temple, because then that's the deity resides there, and by rebuilding or maintaining an old temple, you get, I think, 100 or 1,000 times the benefit of building a brand new one. Like that. Because otherwise people like to build for false ego. But then how do you maintain? There's already ones falling apart. So then the king should maintain the ones that are already there. Like that. And if they do that, plus they want to build more, that's fine. But they maintain, they get, there's more benefit. Tell the beardless that, yeah, yeah.
Prabhupada also said it's more important to maintain a devotee than to make new ones.
Yeah.
Same principle.
Yeah.
Because the body's a temple.
Yeah.
The mountains being mentioned because of the
Here, I think on a mountain is being made, probably because people are walking there or moving through there. You know, here, because then the next one also says on the top of a mountain. You know, that would be because the mountain itself is a personality. So generally, one wouldn't. Then that's where people may go up and sit there and things. Mm-hmm. Nor in holes inhabited by living creatures, nor while he walks or stands, nor on reaching the bank of a river, nor on the top of a mountain. On reaching the bank of a river, because that's where people are going to go down to take their bath, and they get mud from there for bathing and everything like that. So there should be some distance from the river. Then should not also be done facing the wind, you know, obvious, or a fire, because of the respect, or looking towards a brahmana, the sun, water, or cows, because all these are respected. You know? Okay. He may ease himself having covered the ground with sticks, clods, leaves, grass, and the like, restraining his speech, keeping himself pure, wrapping up his body, and covering his head. Mentions, goes, you know, during the day this direction, night that direction, then it says, but if it's dark or in shade, then it doesn't matter. Or if one's life is in danger. The intellect of a man who avoids urine against a fire, the sun, the moon, in water, against a brahmana, cow, or the wind perishes. Let him not blow a fire with his mouth. So that means you always blow through the hand. Through the hand, through a pipe, something, but not directly. You want to blow out a candle, you'll blow through over your palm and then blow it out, not directly. Let him not blow a fire with his mouth. Let him not look at a naked woman. Let him not throw any impure substance into the fire. And let him not warm his feet at it. It means, you know, fire shouldn't warm your feet there. It's out of respect of Agni.
What about a blow heater?
Huh?
A blow heater.
I think that's
different.
Yeah. But it is interesting because they combine two. Combined wind and heat. Let him not place fire under a bed or the like, nor step over it, nor place it when he sleeps at the foot end of his bed. Let him not torment living creatures. Let him not eat, nor travel, nor sleep during the twilight. Let him not scratch the ground. When you scratch the ground, you just, you know, just waste your time just drawing on the ground or just things like that. Because then the ground is also, what do you say? Wooey, baby. Let him not take off his garland. So it's offered because a garland protects one. If it's offered with affection, it protects one. It's like a pavitra, or a kavacha, like that. I guess whatever the purpose is, whatever it was for, like that.
Class?
Yeah, like the class it's given, you wear it. After the class, we could take it off. You know, or if someone's giving you just before you go somewhere, then at least you wear it for, you know, some time. Right there.
We can, but how does one dispose of garbage?
Well, it means it depends on what the thing. You have old leaves or this or that, they can be burnt. But generally, you know, you compost them or things like that. But this is, means is that you have some fire, and then you throw something into it. Yeah, generally. That depends upon what the garbage is. It's more as there's a fire, you have nothing to do with it, you see, you just chuck something in. Like that. That's not as much working with the fire. In other words, one is respectful to fire. That's all.
I heard once that one doesn't put sacred items in the fire.
Generally, that's not the first option. First option is that they would be thrown into water. Like that. You know, then the next would probably be they'd be buried. Then if that's not possible, then they could be burnt. Let them not spit into the water, nor throw clothes defiled by impure substances, nor any other impurity, nor blood, nor poisonous things. So that's the water. So he doesn't disrespect fire in the water. Let him not sleep alone in the deserted dwelling. Let him not wake a superior who is sleeping. Let him not converse with a woman in her period of contamination. Nor let him go to a sacrifice if he is not chosen to be the officiating priest. Let him keep his right arm uncovered in a place where the sacred fire is kept. In a cow pen, in the presence of brahmanas, during the private recitation of the Veda, and at meals. No, his right arm. The right arm. Let him not interrupt a cow who is suckling her calf, nor tell anyone of it.
Regarding meals. Krishna Katha during Prashad, that's beneficial. But if we're talking nonsense, then that's disrespectful to the Prashad.
That was in relationship to the clothes here, or that was just came up?
No, the one you just read. Not to converse during meals.
No.
Oh, that was something else.
That was a different thing. Let him keep his right arm uncovered in a place where the sacred fire is kept. Then he should keep the right arm uncovered in a cow pen in the presence of brahmanas during the private recitation of the Vedas and at meals. In other words, for sacred things, then generally the right arm is kept uncovered. That before what we meant is when he was going to the toilet, then he must not talk. Because the cow is very affectionate to the calf, you know, so you don't go and interrupt them, you know, because it's disturbed. You don't tell anyone else about it. Everybody comes, stands around and looks, and the cow feels uncomfortable, you know, because she wants to be able to give her attention to the calf. You know? So, you know, be respectful to the cow. Let him not dwell in a village where the sacred law is not obeyed, nor stay long where diseases are endemic. Let him not dwell in a country where the rulers dwell in a country where the rulers are Shudras.
Let's go back to that.
Yeah. Means that's where he makes his dwelling. Means preaching, one can go anywhere. Like that. Let him not eat anything from which the oil has been extracted. Let him not be a glutton. Let him not eat very early in the morning, nor very late in the evening. Let him not exert himself without a purpose. Let him not eat food placed in his lap, because then your cloth and everything becomes unclean. He should not grind his teeth or make uncouth noises. And one shouldn't eat out of anything that looks contaminated. Let him not travel with untrained beasts of burden. Right, yeah. Otherwise it make it a problem. Let him not do anything that is useless or will have disagreeable results in the future. Yeah. Let him not eat after sunset any food containing sesame grains. Let him never sleep naked, nor go anywhere unpurified after his meals. In other words, you always have to wash your hands, mouth, feet. Let him eat while his feet are yet wet from the ablution, but let him not go to bed with wet feet. He who eats while his feet are still wet will obtain long life. And he shouldn't sleep in impure places. Let him wake in the muhurta sacred to Brahman and think of the acquisition of spiritual merit. And of wealth and of the bodily fatigue arising therefrom. Means how much difficult, you know, just the problems that come with trying to accumulate wealth, and the true meaning of the Veda. By prolonging their japa, the sages obtain long life, wisdom, honor, fame, and excellence in Vedic knowledge. Let him not recite the shastras indistinctly. So is there any? Any questions or anything on that? Or?
Husband and wife eating together. If somebody else is serving,
it's, that's one thing. This can't be that. Depends on the situation. But that you could ask. You'd have to ask. That I would say you could ask some of the women from the Brahmin families and stuff like that. I'm not sure if there's occasions where they will at all, or if it's just a normal occasion they won't. Mm-hmm. Like that. It's very, very hard to say. Things that are fairly obvious. I mean, a lot of these are talked about in the Pancharatra also. You know, Pancharatra Pradeep says a lot, most of these anyway. Because mm-hmm. Sanatana Goswami has gone through all the scriptures. I think Hari Bhaktivinoda quotes about 200 scriptures. Like that. This is Manu Samhita.
You were saying that Lakshmi is annoyed when the smoke comes from the lamp. So when we do puja, we offer a ghee lamp first to the spiritual masters. And Govinda Maharaj told me that when the flame goes out and it starts smoking, it's inauspicious. And so I always put an achaman, a spoon of water, and a
Yeah, good. Good. I'm not sure if it applies specifically to those lamps, but it does to these lamps. Because if these ones smoke like that, it means that either we just blew them out, or we let them burn out. The oil burnt up. So it just means that improper dealing. So in that way, then, it must always be put down into the oil.
Agriculture is so careful. Deals with animals.
Yeah, everything. Everything is respected. So it's. That's the thing. When devotees say, "Well, we tried Vedic culture; it didn't work," I would challenge that very severely. They didn't try Vedic culture. I mean, I've been around. Who's been trying?
They have to know what is Vedic culture.
Yeah, of course. Prabhupada always talks about it, so it's there. And that, but you have to follow it according to how he presents it, what he presents. And if we don't, then we can't say that we necessarily tried it. You know? Like if the businessman says, you buy something cheap, you sell it more expensive than you bought it. Right? And then you go out and buy something expensive and sell it for cheaper. And they say, well, don't be fanatic. I mean, you've got to buy something, you've got to sell something. I mean, isn't that it? You know, it says all these rules, you know, you got to buy it cheaper and sell it more expensive. I mean, we got to be practical, you know. We just buy anything we can get our hands on and sell it to anybody we can get our hands on. I mean, they won't buy it for the price they won't buy it for the price we bought it for. So, I mean, we got to be practical. You know? But then when the business fails, then you can't say, well, we tried your business, but it doesn't work. It means you have to do it the way it's said to be done, because there is a reason. And if it's done that way, then it has meaning. Otherwise, it doesn't.
It's also compared to a doctor's prescription. You think, yeah, well, there's a bitter thing and a sweet thing. I'll take the sweet thing. I'll leave the bitter part.
Yeah. Yes.
I come from a very low literature background. Therefore, there's a trigger. And who have come in contact with Krishna consciousness, how do they assess on which platform to behave? Because they are not even on the platform of Shudra, or to speak of, you know, Kshatriya Brahmana. As you said, someone who practices Krishna consciousness knows the goal and type and person to which
I swear consciousness. So it says there that one should dress, act, speak, behave according to his position. So as a devotee, then we have to act, dress, behave according to that. That is the proper thing. So that is our understanding, that is the consciousness, so that is our culture. That the behavior is just these things that we just discussed here. You know, study, follow the sadhana, you know, be gentle with others, like that, be pure, clean, dress simply, live simply, always absorb themselves in spiritual activities. Thank you. No, I'll just wear this one. Thank you. They're not difficult. That's the thing. They're not difficult. Is it difficult to wear a white dhoti and a white kurta or a white chadar? Is it difficult? You know? You know, is it difficult to eat with your right hand? Is it difficult to to wash your hands and mouth and feet after eating? Is it difficult to behave nicely with women and cows and Brahmins and all that? Is it difficult to not pass urine on fire or in water or in a place where people will walk or where a cow will cow may sleep? Yes, so then... Yes, but when it comes in the way, then we should be very humble. Then we should be humble and understand I'm below the standard, but by practice, I may be able to come up to the standard. Like that. But if we become proud, you know, well, we're Westerners, you know, and all this, it's fanatic, then it'll be very difficult for us. And if we can't even follow a simple rule like that, how are we going to follow, we can't surrender a little rule like that, how are we going to be able to surrender and give our whole life to Krishna? We may say, I chant Hare Krishna. So that is the most important of all the rules. And so if we do that, even if you don't do everything else, then slowly, slowly we'll become purified and all that. But it's the nature of one who is chanting the holy name is, you know, he is respected even by the demigods because they see that the natural good qualities are there. And when good qualities are there, you naturally behave properly. You know? Like that. So all these qualities of cleanliness, humility, kindness to others, you know, having knowledge, having detachment, these naturally come for the devotee. It's a matter of practice. What one can practice, one does. But the point is the essential element is humility. Because it's the first symptom of knowledge, is humility. In the, what is it, 18 qualities of knowledge? Krishna says these things are knowledge and everything else is ignorance. First quality is humility. Because when you have knowledge, you know who you are. When we know who we are, we know that we're Krishna's servants, so then we become humble. So if we're having difficulty becoming humble, it means our knowledge is not so great. Or we have great vast knowledge, but we don't have much realization. As we contemplate and have realization, then we become humble. What time is it?
It's like 20 to 8.
Yeah, I think we should stop. I know that I'm getting restless due to tiredness. Okay, so stop. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I'm tired. Thank you. Oh. Mataji, this kind of class, that kind of Mataji who came before will not really appreciate. It's just because it's a particularly technical class that if you don't already know the background of it, then it will be can cause anxiety. Because when some they're not used to just see, funny thing in the West is even though they're so, how do you say, loose about talking about sex and this and that, when it gets right down to technical, they're not. The Vedic culture doesn't loosely talk about, but because of this, they can talk about, you know, technicalities very openly. Because there's not an attachment, it's just a matter of the facts.